Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to today's edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, our end of the year awards continue here. Our McLaughlin style look at the biggest stories, craziest stories, people who rose, people who fell, all sorts of different things to consider in a very busy year of politics here in 2010. Today we lead off with what we are considering the worst scandal of 2010. Take it away.
Usually in these scenarios, you're thinking of, you know, bribery or sex scandals. But if you had to ask me what was most scandalous in the world of politics in this past year, I think just from top to bottom, the way Congress handled Obamacare and health care reform. You can, you know, some of this goes back to 2009, but the Cornhusker kickback, the Demon Pass. But I think most prominently how little certain lawmakers knew about it, how much they and the administration disregarded contrary evidence, contrary arguments, warnings that this thing was going to have unforeseen ramifications and, you know, impacts they couldn't predict. How certain lawmakers said they hadn't read the bill, how some of them scoffed at the idea that they had to read the bill before voting on it. I think just top to bottom, it was a jaw-dropping exercise in arrogance and unaccountability and disregard for the views of the public. And so I think that is the biggest scandal and probably the single, you know, as bad as the economy was, probably the single biggest driver of Republican gains in the midterm elections.
Oh, I think you're exactly right about that. I kind of adopted your philosophy, just went with a different issue here. And it's, again, the arrogance of the administration and not reading the legislation. This time, though, I'm talking about SB 1070 out in Arizona, the people there strongly supporting it, the legislature strongly supporting it, and then without reading it, or at least shortly before filing federal charges trying to stop this law from taking effect, Eric Holder admitted to Congress he hadn't read it, Janet Napolitano hadn't read it, but they're strongly against it. And of course, now basically the law has been gutted as it works its way through the appeal system, but basically gutting the rights and the sovereignty of Arizona, as well as an overwhelming majority of the people of that state, to try and finally get some sense about the border and getting some law and order in place there. Got to go with that one.
You know, Greg, it probably says something about our year that I put my fourth mind, which I'm going to stick by, but I hear yours, like, boy, that's a darn good one. And I'm sure there are probably people that are like, wait a minute, the failure of the stimulus, that's the biggest scandal. I'm like, no, Rangel, no, Maxine Waters, you know. Like, I'm sure listeners out there are saying, wait a minute. And there's just a long, long list of just endless scandals that you can pick from this year, and all of them are terrible. Yeah. So picking out a word, look, you know, there are no winners in this. We're all losers.
Oh,
to this governing class.
Absolutely right. I mean, some of these categories, you're racking your brain trying to think of one person that qualifies for the category. Worst scandal, not a problem. Yeah. Let's move on now to best political theater of 2010. Certainly a lot of posturing both sides of the aisle, many different issues. But what ended up at the top of the heap for you?
Well, we saw a lot of entertaining ups and downs and events in the midterms. But I'm going to go back to the beginning of the year, Greg, and just say that years from now, when young Democrats gather around the campfire because they've saved up enough carbon offsets to pay for it, they will tell horror stories about the slow motion implosion of the Martha Coakley campaign in the special election up in Massachusetts. And I'm sure we all remember, you know, particular gaffes and moments that just kind of hurt, you know, just unbelievably stupid, foolish, you know, foot in mouth, misguided comments. Coakley scoffing at shaking hands of the winner outside Fenway Park, when she called Red Sox pitcher Curt Schilling a Yankee fan, when she suggested that Catholics shouldn't work in emergency rooms. But I think what just kind of stands out for me of the, oh my goodness, this woman is doomed moment, was when she goes out to make an attack ad against Scott Brown, calling him a stooge of big banks, and the file photo that her campaign uses to represent big banks was the World Trade Center. And this, you know, this almost got kind of overlooked amidst all the other ones. But I just looked at it as like, wow, it's as if her own advertising team hates her and is doing everything they can for Scott Brown. I mean, how epically misguided do you have to be? Like, oh, pick out a bank file photo, just whatever says banks or Wall Street or something like that. Just find me a big New York building and not recognizing the building in it. That just kind of strikes me as one we will just. You know, like I said, Democrats will tell horror stories. We will be laughing about the Martha Coakley campaign for years and years to come.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was no shortage of institutions that received bailout money. It wasn't that hard to find a picture. I'm going to go with a New York figure, staying relatively close to Massachusetts. Charlie Rangel, obviously censured, went through a whole lot of ethical ups and downs this year, mostly downs as it turned out at the end of the year. But Charlie Rangel, if nothing else, is great for political theater. His speech on the floor, which had to absolutely frustrate Nancy Pelosi to no end, where he said he wasn't going anywhere, basically dissing President Obama for suggesting that Charlie Rangel's time to step down from Congress has come. And then, of course, the defiant request for more time to find himself a lawyer, despite having several months to do that. And then 2 days later, in the feeblest of voices, not sure how much time he has left to live as the sentencing from the Ethics Committee was about to be considered. Charlie Rangel deserved what he got, certainly, but he's entertaining nonetheless. On to the worst political theater now. And again, just like worst scandal, probably not a shortage of nominees here. Who'd you pick?
It's one of those things that I think comes very clear at the end of the year, not necessarily at the time. And I remember saying that I liked this at the time. But Greg, I think we can look at the I'm Not a Witch ad as maybe the most spectacularly counterproductive ad of this cycle. Obviously for Christine O'Donnell, after she became the Republican nominee in Delaware for Senate, it was designed to put all of the ridiculous stuff behind her and just kind of, you know, get, oh, you know, you've heard the stuff on Bill Maher, you know, this is all crazy talk. And instead, that opening line, which is, you know, definitely grabs you, and I think some people said was the most memorable line in politics of this year, it came to define the campaign. I mean, you say, I'm not a witch. Everyone knows precisely who you're talking about and why you're talking about it. But I also think I'm looking at, remembering back to that ad and kind of the closing line, what followed after I'm not a witch. Greg, I think I'm you might be one of the most difficult sales pitch for any candidate, never mind Christine O'Donnell. Because let's say you have a really great candidate. Marco Rubio, I think is a consensus. Everyone said he did a fantastic job. If Marco Rubio had said, I'm you, some people probably would have said, okay, yeah. And then a lot of people might have said, well, wait a minute, no, you're a lawyer, or you've been in politics your whole life. Or they might have said, your parents are immigrants and mine aren't, or they this or that. You know, for example, Marco Rubio is a heck of a lot better looking than I am. So he's not me. So you can just kind of, if it wouldn't work for him, for a candidate who doesn't have this universally appealing life story, et cetera, it's going to be a very tough sales pitch. And as a result, I think people just kind of started seeing the distinctions between themselves and O'Donnell, and they kind of didn't like the way she presumed something about the audience. And in the end, the ad did a lot of self-inflicted damage on a campaign that really couldn't afford it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I picked the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. She gave a speech, I believe it was in the early part of the year, very near the time the House approved the Senate version of the health care bill, and then, of course, did the additional changes that eventually passed the Senate through reconciliation. Her line of, we have to pass the bill to find out what's in it, I think crystallized the hatred for the way this Congress did business, the hatred for this legislation in particular, in a way that almost nothing else could have. She just showed once again, it's almost along the same lines as why would we read the bill? It just showed such a level of being out of touch that it absolutely, in one neat little statement, showed what was completely wrong with this whole process.
Yeah, I think basically a good way of thinking is that major legislation really shouldn't be a surprise party. It's not like you could say, I vote aye, and surprise, the bill is terrible. You know, it was, I think you're right, a very clarifying statement, a very, very illuminating statement. So that's pretty good there. And, you know, but because it, you know, it works so terribly against Democrats, I couldn't call it the worst political theater.
That's true, although they did pass the bill. So there's,
yeah. Oh, good point.
There's that little sobering reminder. Jim, we'll do some more of these awards tomorrow. Talk to you then.
Looking forward to it, Greg. Yeah.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us next time for the 3 Martini Lunch.